Chapter 26. Between the Living and Those Who Have Crossed. It took Brother Afafrenfir a long while to even realize what he had done. He had melted from the physical world, become an entity of pure spirit, and had done so just ahead of the plunging blade. Or had it been after the blade had driven through him, the monk wondered. It didn't matter. If this was death, then so be it. And at the moment he saw his life's journey. He sat in the small cottage with his mother and his father, who would turn on him years later when the truth of Afafrenfir became known to him. Remember was not the right word. He lived again his journey to the monastic life, his acceptance into the order. He saw again the first time he had met Parbid. He walked again his travels to the shadow realm. So many memories, separating, scattering, becoming a living part of the multiverse around him, unbound and shared. It was beauty. He understood now Grandmaster Kane's warning that he wasn't ready to transcend, that he hadn't the discipline or the desire to reverse the journey and return to finish his days. That warning rang hollow now, though. Of course he didn't want to go back. He existed in the moment, his senses widening, losing focus, becoming all and everything. It was beauty, yes, but it was veiled beauty. The monk felt as if he was swimming in a thick cloud. His senses filtered to all that was around him, or in a fugue state, a malleable reality, a malleable identity and sense of self even. It was only when Afafrenfir encountered another untethered memory that he even remembered what had brought him to Thornhold in the first place, for he knew it to be the residual life force and identity composition of Drizzt Do'Urden. He looked more closely, found focus in that sense of duty. How clearly he could see the drow's journey now, finding bits of scattered memories and piecing them together. Drizzt's entire journey, and not just this last one, which had brought him from the realm of the living. The intimacy overwhelmed him, as intimate a joining as he had known with Parbid, and as joyous. But this was different. Afafrenfir felt almost like a voyeur, peeking in on the deepest thoughts and secrets of another who did not know he was watching and listening. His last sensibilities of decorum, and truly they seemed petty now, made him reach out to Drizzt reciprocally to let the drow know that he was there now too. And yes, he could see Drizzt so much more clearly now that he too was in that thin time-space between the living and those who had crossed over, between the physical and the spiritual, between life and death. Afafrenfir wasn't sure those terms applied anymore. He reached out to Drizzt. He called to the drow. He told Drizzt to return, to reform to the physical world. You are needed. Your wife. Your child. Drizzt couldn't hear him, or at least offered no response, no sensation of being affected by Afafrenfir's calls at all. Deeper went the monk, trying to coax the drow back, but the deeper he went, the further he, Afafrenfir, fell from the physical world and any notions of his body. He was surely losing himself as much, if not more, than he was rescuing Drizzt. So be it. For the being who had been Brother Afafrenfir could not view his accelerating journey as a loss, not with this beauty and truth all about him. He reached further for Drizzt, but Drizzt Do'Urden, gone so long, could not hear. This is madness, Dabney's fingers signed to Braylon Jonquet. The forest around them was alive with driders, packs of them roaming wildly, hacking at trees, throwing enormous spears at squirrels and birds, anything to vent their unending rage. Raylan couldn't disagree. He motioned for the woman to follow and led her to a deep hollow beneath a spreading oak tree, a place they had huddled the previous night. "We knew that Matron Jindia had brought Dryders along with her," Raylan reminded her when they were out of earshot. "Not like that," Dabney insisted. "You saw them. They were different. I don't even know how to explain it. Somehow bigger, more feral even than what we have seen of the abominations. That was, I don't know." "You may be right, but we still must find our way to Matron Mother Quenthal or Ivanel," Braylon replied. But Dabney was shaking her head with almost every word. "You cannot expect this of me," Dabney protested. "This is larger than my powers, larger than Camoriel's demand, larger than Bregan de Earth even." "We survive because we each do our part." "My part puts me in the face of Matron Mother Quenthal Bayenri, and with this chaos about us," Dabney argued. "It is not a path to survival, no." She shook her head resolutely. "I need to know more before I begin to go deeper into this forest, let alone deliver Kimuriel's message to the Matron Mother. These Dryders unsettle me. Something huge is afoot, and it seems likely to me that merely uttering that which Kimuriel has claimed will mark me as an apostate. I do not wish to join this Dryder force." "If it is Matron Jindia's force, then it is at odds with Matron Mother Quenthal. Before, perhaps, we do not know that now." Braylon blew out a sigh and lowered his gaze, trying to find an answer. "Then we look magically," he decided, glancing up at Dabney. He pointed to the back of the hollow, where some water had collected from a recent rain. "You would ask me to magically look in on Matron Mother Bayenri, or any Bayenris?" an incredulous Dabney asked. "No. We'll look over the forest and bleeding vines. We'll find Matron Jindia. She's not known for divination and is usually too consumed by her anger at everything around her to even note any magical eavesdropping." Dabney didn't look convinced. "It is this, or we trek through the forest and try to avoid the Dryders as best as we can," said Braylon. "No." "You would not like Kimuriel when he is angry," Braylon warned. As Dabney hesitated, he turned and motioned his hand out toward the pool. She followed. "You will take me to Matron Jindia," the priestess told the enormous Dryder.
"Will I?"
Malfouche answered slyly. This woman was out in the forest with a handful of attendants, now fully surrounded by dozens of Dryders, weaving in and out of the shadows all about. "I am Tehrul Armgo, first priestess of the second house of Menzo Berenzon," the woman replied.
"The second house?" asked Malfouche. "Where is the Bayenri, then?"
Tehrul chuckled. "The Bayenris would not be pleased with the message I offer to Matron Jindia. It is clear that Loth shines upon her. We all know it. But Matron Mother Bayenri isn't sure that she can bring herself to admit it yet. Matron Jindia should learn all of this before she makes a rash move. Time is on her side, not Matron Mother Bayenri's." Malfouche glanced about, nodding to her minions.
"You may come," she told Tehrul. "You alone."
"That is not except—"
"That is all you get," Malfouche interrupted. "You alone."
A Dryder rushed up beside Tehrul and held out his hands to her.
"You will ride," Malfouche instructed.
Tehrul looked around at her guards, then nodded. "Wait here," she instructed. And as she did, she looked to Malfouche, who agreed that this would be the place for them to remain. The priestess took the Dryder's hand and was hauled up and swung around to take an uncomfortable seat behind her mount. Malfouche skittered up right beside her, and before Tehrul could stop it, plopped a heavy bag over Tehrul's head. Before the priestess could begin to protest, the Dryders set off at a tremendous pace, rushing through the forest, arriving at last in the ruins of Bleeding Vines at the court of Matron Jindia Malarn. "It grows ever more curious," Braylon said, as they watched the journey of the drow priestess riding the Dryder. "That is Tehrul, first priestess of House Barriss and Del Armgo," Dabney told him. sent to meet with Matron Jindia? Matron Mother Quenthal would never agree to such a thing. Dabney smirked at him for stating the obvious. Do it, he ordered her. Dabney took a deep breath. She had thus far refused to cast clairaudience to go along with her clairvoyance to Iyamur, as the former was often more easily detected. Now, though, it seemed rather obvious that they needed to know exactly what was going on. As they watched Tehrul Armgo walking forward to speak with Jindia, Dabney cast the spell. She was not detected during that conversation, but that did little to assuage her or her companions, she noted with some satisfaction, nervousness. As she had earlier insisted, and as it quickly became obvious as they listened in, the scene here was much bigger than her. Tehrul, the voice of powerful Matron Mesbaris Armgo, was all but offering Matron Jindia the second seat on the ruling council. The drow often spoke quietly about inter-house wars, but the idea here was well beyond that. The two women, a matron and a first priestess of another house, were openly discussing a civil war in Menzo Berenzon, a war against House Bayenri. And they were doing so brashly, apparently without concern. The way is clear now, Tehrul said. The way is Loth, of course, and Loth has shown us the glory before us. Shown us? Matron Jindia replied, her skeptical, almost mocking tone, the first hints of a crack in the asked-for alliance. We have all seen the gifts the Spider Queen has offered. Offered to whom? Jindia asked. Yes, Matron Jindia. Matron Mesbaris does not deny that you were the vessel for Lolf's desires. I am Lolf's champion, Jindia corrected. Is that not obvious? Her question sounded like a threat to Dabney and Braylon, and obviously to First Priestess Tehrul, who began shifting nervously from foot to foot. And you will be rewarded like her champion, Tehrul finally managed to reply. Well, it seems clear to me that Lolth's champion should sit at the first seat of her table, not the second, Jindia declared. The logic is hard to argue, Tehrul quickly replied, and the speed and smoothness of her response told the onlookers that Mesbaris had sent her daughter here with the expectation that Matron Jindia would demand no less. I will take your answer to Matron Mesbaris. Matron Mesbaris desires the first seat, said Jindia, stalling Tehrul's leaving. Would she be a proper high priestess of Lady Lolth if she did not? Tehrul answered. True enough, Jindia admitted with a mirthless chuckle. Even the vicious priestess's laughter evinced a threat. You understand the power of the army, of my army, Jindia said. An army granted me by the Spider Queen? I have seen it, yes. Matron Mesbaris understands it as well. Then understand this. I will win here. The gathering of Menzo Berenzon must join in with me to finally clear the land of our enemies and restore the mighty forge and complex into the hands of Lolth's faithful. The victory is mine above all others, and that will not be forgotten. Nor will this fight be the last, obviously, unless House Bayenri agrees to Lolth's obvious demands. If they do not, and I do not expect the stubborn and foolish Matron Quenthal to put Lolth above her pride, then I welcome Matron Mesbaris' assistance in carrying out the will of Lolth, and thus her seat will be secured as it now stands, of course. But do not misunderstand anything I say to you. I will win. Lolth is with me. Her handmaidens stand beside me. Menzo Berenzon will be reformed by the will of Lolth. The perversions of Matron Mother Ivanel Bayenri's foolish daughters will be corrected with extreme effect. Tehrul nodded, and seemed to the eavesdropping Dabney as if she couldn't find her voice for a reply. The actions of Matron Mesbaris will be properly judged. That is my promise, Jindia concluded. She waved her hand to Malfouche and the other driders. Leave me, she ordered Tehrul. I have a war to finish. Braylon Jonquet slapped his hand into the water of the scrying pool, breaking the connection. This is madness, he told Dabney. This is chaos. But then again, what hasn't been so of late? the priestess answered. The demon surge in Menzoberranzan, the fight with Demogorgon, Matron Mother Bayenri using Drizdo Erden as the sword to cleave Lolf's greatest demon rival, it is all madness. Are we really so surprised now to learn that Menzoberranzan's very structure and identity is tearing asunder? We have to get to Matron Mother Bayenri, or to Ivanel at least. Dabney shook her head. You are welcome to try. Kimoriel gave you your orders, Braylon reminded her, but again the priestess shook her head. Our lives, nay, more than our lives, our very existence, rests upon the choices we make in this moment, Dabney explained. You heard Matron Jindia, and even Matron Mesbaris does not refute the ascension of House Malarn under the glory of Lolf. Now you would think to side against that? And you would think to side against the Bayenris? Braylon returned skeptically. No. I would deign to stay removed from this altogether. There is nothing here that lowly Dabney can truly influence. I am less than a speck to them, my voice less than a whisper. I would go to Matron Mother Bayenri, and perhaps she would declare me a heretic and turn me into an abominable drider. And would she be wrong if I was delivering to her words against Lady Lolf? Matron Mother Bayenri needs to see the truth Kimuriel has revealed to be able to decide. And if she decides not to fight Matron Jindia and her growing allies, one of whom might well be Lolf, then what am I? Braylon stared at her but didn't respond. I am then a drider, Dabney answered her own question. And so are you. Jarlaxle would not allow that, Braylon said. Dabney's laugh answered it all, reflecting the absurdity of Braylon's protest. Still, she felt the need to say, Jarlaxle? Jarlaxle, too, is a dust mote against the shifting powers battling before us. Perhaps you are correct, Braylon conceded. It is bigger than the voice of Dabney and of Braylon. He reached under his shirt and produced the whistle. Perhaps Kimoriel, too, will have second thoughts with this new information. If he survived his journey to the Hive Mind, Dabney said, what if he did not? What would Dabney suggest? This time the woman just stared and shook her head. So Braylon blew hard into the whistle. No sound came forth, but the scout wasn't expecting any, for he had seen Jarlaxle use this item of communication with the strange Kimuriel Oblodr before. Only a few moments later. Braylon was indeed surprised, though, for he found Kimuriel right outside the hollow of the tree, with Wulfgar the Barbarian standing beside him. I was already on my way to this place, the psionicist answered, their obvious surprise. Your call was most welcomed, given the task before us. Have you found Matron Mother Bayenri? She's not hard to find, Braylon replied, pointing to the southeast. The whole of Menzoberranzan surrounds her. Then come along, Kimuriel instructed. We also found Matron Jindia, Dabney said, stopping him in his tracks, and First Priestess Teyrul Armgo. Kimuriel looked at her curiously. Open your mind to me, child, and do tell. Despite his dismissive pejorative, Dabney did let him into her thoughts as she recounted their scrying, for she wanted Kimuriel to see all of it, every terrifying bit. To her surprise, and with Kimuriel's power, both Wulfgar and Braylon joined the telepathic discussion.
So what do we do now?
Wulfgar asked when she was done. Kimuriel cast a sidelong glance at him.
I would go to find King Brunner, Wulfgar decided. If the Drow are going to go to war against one another, that isn't my concern.
They'll slaughter everyone you hold dear before they do so, Kimuriel assured him. Is that your concern? Wulfgar didn't shrink back from the unnerving, diminutive Drow. Let us go. Matron Mother Bayenri awaits, Kimuriel said, hardly intimidated. He started away, but Dabney and Braylon exchanged looks and did not follow. Kimuriel turned back to regard them. Yes, I understand, he told them. Then specifically to Dabney, he added, I saw your plans in the midst of your storytelling. You wish to go and hide, to see how it all plays out. I won't deny it, Dabney said. Denying with words does not override clear thoughts.
I know not what you expect of me, but I'll not serve myself up to Matron Mother Bayenri or to Matron Jindia Malarn,
Dabney resolutely replied.
And you would not have carried out my orders had I been killed or detained in my journeys,
Gimoriel bluntly stated.
No, Braylon answered before Dabney could.
Gimoriel considered that for a moment, then nodded.
In light of what you divined, that is perhaps the best choice for you, I admit. Go then. Scurry to a dark hole and hide. This will be decided quickly, I expect. And if not, then you will at least know better the drawn lines.
And if Matron Mother Bayenri prevails, then so will Bregan D'Earth, Dabney said. In that event, what for us?
Jarlaxle values you both.
But you will tell him of our cowardice here? Braylon asked.
I will tell him that you behaved exactly as Jarlaxle would behave in your place, Gimoriel answered.
Dabney and Braylon exchanged looks that were both surprised and relieved.
Oh, he has done similar before, I assure you, Gimoriel told them. Many times. It is how he survives. It is how we all survive. He ended with a snort and quietly added, perhaps to our everlasting damnation.
With a shrug, Gimoriel turned, bidding Wolfgar to follow, and started away.
Gimoriel,
Braylon called after he had gone a few steps, turning him back once more.
I wish you well on this journey, and not just for my own good fortune, Braylon told him.
For all of us, then,
Gimoriel telepathically imparted to both Braylon and Dabney.